Our topic for today is that of herbal remedies. Page 36 in your notebooks. You'll find some information on that, and I'll have a bit more to say. From time to time, somebody says to me, Dr. Thrash, don't speak to this congregation about thus and such, because we're in this community or this state or this area, we are big on this or that, and so don't speak to us about that. And I've been asked, when I'm in Wisconsin, don't talk to us about cheese. When I'm in Mexico, they say, Dr. Thrash, don't mention cayenne here. In the Orient, we don't want you to say anything about fermented foods. In the South, it's, don't speak about our salt. And of course, in California, they don't want you to say much about table wine. And in Puerto Rico or Louisiana, they don't want you to speak very unfavorably about their sugar. And in some medical circles, they don't want you to say anything about herbs. And we were in agreement with that idea some years ago, and we didn't understand that we should feel free to use some herbs. But then at that time, we didn't understand that you could use foods in the treatment of disease. Foods are, of course, a part of maintenance of health. But now we are learning that you can treat disease with foods, with a certain diet. Design a diet for your disease. A diet designed to encourage the kind of help that you need to fight a certain disease. Remove those foods that tend to promote a certain disease that you may have. We're learning more about that. Seventh-day Adventists have taught for over 100 years. I was surprised to read one time in what Seventh-day Adventists have taught that physicians should experiment with foods in the treatment of disease. And we've also taught, or they did, I'm a Johnny-come-lately as a Seventh-day Adventist, but they taught also that there was healing in certain trees, which is now being found. Being discovered by medical science, but Seventh-day Adventists have taught it for over 100 years. So when we first began to treat using simple remedies and trying to avoid the use of drugs and surgery as much as we could, those things that we knew that we had available to us were such things as the correction of all the violations of the 8 natural laws of health, and you have something in your notebook on that. And certain things in diet, we knew about losing weight, we knew how to treat a diabetic, we knew a few things about how to treat a person with hypertension, but that was about as far as it went. We didn't know much else. And in fact, how to treat a diabetic and how to treat a person with hypertension, we only knew the very rudiments of that. And then we knew about regularity and some things about cleanliness. And then we learned about water treatments and exercise. And then after a while, we learned about charcoal and compresses of various kinds. I learned about comfrey compresses in a very interesting way. I'd been in an accident, and I had a large flap injury on my leg, on the front of my leg, where it's difficult to heal anyway. So this big flap that was about the size of my hand flapped all the way down, had to be sewed up and around, had blood supply only from below, and across the shin it doesn't have much, there's not a lot of blood supply there anyway for it to get a lot of nourishment. So the surgeon who sewed it up said he was worried about it, whether it could heal that much without maybe having the loss of some of the tissue up at the top and possibly even having to have a skin graft. In the same accident, I had some compression fractures of vertebrae, and I was in a lot of pain from that, and I got some trauma in various parts, and I had pain from that. And so I was in a lot of misery, and he said, I'm going to put you in the hospital here, and we'll keep you here. I said, no, I'll go back to Uchi Pines. Ah, but you might have ileus, as much trauma as you've had. I said, no, I'll go back to Uchi Pines. We have some nurses there, and they can take care of me, and my husband will be there, and he can watch over me, and so I'll go back there. And I knew that if I was in the hospital, they'd be giving me the narcotics, and that would give me the ileus, so that would make my bowel stop moving. And so I wanted to be at home if I could. But I was miserable. So after I had turned back and forth and back and forth without one wink of sleep all night long, could not stop in bed because when I got to this side, I was too uncomfortable. I knew I could not even stop. I would just turn to the other side and just went back and forth like this all night long. Next morning, we had a little German cook who had been trained in England to do hydrotherapy. She came in and she said, she was a nurse, and you know, doctors and nurses have this sort of thing between them. Nurses say that doctors are the worst patients ever. I was determined I was not going to be a bad patient. I was determined I was not going to live up to that reputation. I was going to, whatever the nurses suggested, you know, that's fine, I'll be happy to do it. So she came in and she said, Dr. Thrash? Well, you know, nurses also approach doctors a little bit. They expect that the doctor is not going to accept what they say. And so she came and sort of hat in hand and said, Dr. Thrash, I learned this comfrey poultice when I was in England. Well, the very word poultice to a physician is odious. And she said, would you like me to put it on? You know, we like the word compress. We don't like the word poultice. So I said, if you think it would help, that would be fine. Because a lot of my pain was in my leg where I had that big flap injury. So she brought it. And now, you bear in mind that I had not had one comfortable moment. I had not slept all night long. And it was by that time about 8, no appetite whatsoever. Couldn't, the thought of eating was not even in my mind. So when she brought that comfrey compress in and put it on my flap injury that was giving me so much pain, it is no exaggeration to say that within 10 minutes I was totally free from pain, and I went to sleep and slept for several hours. And I woke up, and this trained physician, trained mind, said, sleep is a well. Finally, you'll finally get so exhausted you have to sleep. And then, when you wake up, you feel pretty good. So when she came the next time and asked if I'd like another compress, no, I won't need one. I'm doing okay now. But it was short-lived. It didn't last very long, and so it wasn't very long before after I woke up before I was doing this thing again. And so she didn't ask me that time. She just brought one in, and she put it on again, not 10 minutes, and I was comfortable. It began to sink through just a little bit. And also at the same time, she brought for me a green drink. Well, green drinks were to a physician that was about like getting something from the root doctor. So, whatever you think, I was in too much misery to resist. And so she brought the green drink and I took it. Oh, I felt so strong. I got up and sat up in bed, sat up in a chair. First time I'd done that since the accident. And so when I sat in the chair, I felt so good and so strong. I thought, you know, tomorrow I think I could go to the office and do a little, you know, I could at least sign some reports or something. And by that time I had my back brace. But that too was short-lived. And I got weak again. But I was strong enough to resist the second green drink that she offered. But when I got weak again, I accepted it again. And I got strong again. And so it began to dawn on me, there is a healing benefit in what God has provided for us. And we may receive this if we will accept it and receive those things that He has provided. He provided them ahead of time, ahead of our need. He provided in nature the things that we need. In my opinion, in nature, God has provided the healing for every disease that can afflict man. We have simply not found it yet. For some things. Arthritis is one of those we have not found it for. Cancer, we have not found it for that. But I am convinced that it is there. In my mind, it is the same as saying there are some diseases for which God has no remedy. I mean, some sins for which God has no balm. He cannot forgive or He cannot cure people of some sins. It's the same thing in my mind as saying there are some diseases that He has not provided for. But God has provided for all sin. He has provided for all sickness. And we need to look for those things that He has provided. But because of our ignorance, we still do not know the remedy for some things. But for sedation, we know that catnip and hops and skullcap and valerian are very good. We know also that for kidney stones, stone root, gravel root, marshmallow root are good for those. And some of you may know some other herbal remedies that are good for those. My son had a stone that the urologist said it is too large to pass. I've never seen a stone. He's a man who is older than I am. One of our colleagues in Columbus, Georgia, a man that we respect very much. And so when our son got a kidney stone, we took him to see our friend. And he said it won't pass. It's too large. He will need lithotripsy. And it's too high up for us to use the basket on it. You know, they go up with a little basket and can grab it and bring it down. But he said it will come down from where it is. And it will get to a place just where the ureter goes over the brim of the pelvis, and then it will stick right there. It's too big to pass by that. Well, it stuck there. It stuck there for almost a year. And my son, during all this time, was taking these herbs and drinking lots of water and taking a diet that we had prescribed for him that would be the very best for stones. And on New Year's Day this past year, he passed the stone. And we took it to the urologist and showed it to him, and he said, well, I didn't think it would ever pass. It said, you've had miraculous help with that. And we agreed that we had, because we had prayed a lot. My son didn't have the $10,000, and he's not a member yet of the Christian care group. And we were really worried about what would happen to him. We didn't want him to lose his kidney. Then infections, there are various things that are anti-infection, like golden seal, astragalus, garlic, echinacea, grapefruit seed extract. Now, do recognize that grapefruit seed extract is different from grape seed extract. Grape seed extract is similar to pycnogenol. Pycnogenol comes from pine bark. It's a pine bark extract. And there's also a grapeseed extract, which gives the same, essentially the same substance. Then for pain, white willow bark and wild lettuce, cloves. A toothache can sometimes be helped by a clove. Just take the little bud that you buy in the spice counter of a grocery store, and put it right there on the place where you have the pain. And sometimes that will help you to go through the night until you can get the services of a dentist the next day. And then for gastrointestinal problems, slippery elm, flaxseed, aloe vera, and many others. For infections of the gastrointestinal tract and for peptic ulcers. And peptic ulcers now, in most instances, can be shown to be chronic because of a germ, Helicobacter pylori. And we can treat that germ with golden seal and echinacea and garlic and also the grapefruit seed extract. We use that as well. And we have been successful in every case that we have used it for in curing their peptic ulcers.
Thank you.
Then for genitourinary tract problems, buccu tea, whatever the genitourinary tract problem is, we may use the buccu tea, the uva ursi, and corn silk tea, and watermelon seed tea. Now, for genitourinary tract problems, we also sometimes use tea tree oil. And this tea tree oil product that we have here is a very good one for vaginal problems. This is for the douche, for use in that. New Lifestyle Books has some of these. And we are very thankful that we know a little bit about herbs now. Here is a herbal formula that I would like to give to you. This also is for sale at New Lifestyle Books, but I want you to know how to make this up yourself. You will take a pint of vinegar and a half an ounce of myrrh and a half an ounce of calendula. Those are the three things that you need. That's all you need. A pint of vinegar, half an ounce of myrrh, same as is in the Bible, and half an ounce of calendula, C-A-L-E-N-D-U-L-A. It's the little flowering plant that grows in flower gardens. Very nice flower, and it looks somewhat like marigold. It's in the marigold family. You put those three together and soak them for 3 weeks, then strain them, and you have fungus nail medicine. But you can buy it if you wish to. Now let me tell you how to diagnose fungus nail. If you get a splitting nail, a fingernail that separates from the nail bed, you may be getting a fungus nail there. You may see it first as it just separates from the nail bed. And you may just look there, and, that's separating. And then it gets deeper and deeper and deeper until finally the nail begins to split, and then it won't grow out properly. And then you've got an ugly-looking nail there. If you get started with it quickly, you can usually stop it by such things as trimming it really close and using just plain vinegar on it. But if it has advanced a little beyond that, then you will need some medicine. And we have tried a number of things apart from the toxic medicines that you can get from your MD. What you can get by prescription is toxic, and you take it for about a year, and it clears up your fungus nails. Then you stop taking it once they've grown out nice and they're pink and smooth, and then they come back. And you go back to the doctor and say, I'm going to need some more of that medicine. And he says, oh, I can't give you any more. It's too toxic for you to take any more of. Well, I say it was too toxic for you to take in the beginning. Let's find something else if we can that will do the job. But I don't like for people to have to suffer from fungus nails, because a lot of the lameness in elderly people is caused by pain in their toenails from these thickened, gnarled, ridged, discolored nails that have a crumbly material up under there, and they separate from the nail bed, and it makes and they're inflamed around the cuticle, and they get so that they're a big problem. Well, and people have said, well, use white vinegar and that will help it, and or use this or that, and they can cause ingrown toenails, white iodine has also been suggested, and some of these will inhibit the growth, but the only thing that we have found that will be that's curative is this little formula. And it's a great help, but you do have to keep on using it.
What is it?
This is the medicine that you have the formula for. And we just made some up, and we have it for sale for people who don't care to make it up. And it's a little hard sometimes in a herb store to find the myrrh and the calendula, although the help they can get it for you. They just have to sometimes order it, and so you can easily make it up, but you can also purchase it if you wish. You do have to apply it twice a day for the first month. Then after the first month, you can apply it once a day from then on. But it's a long-term treatment, just like any other treatment for fungus nail is. It's long-term treatment. You can expect that it's going to be over a year that you'll have to be treating it, because it must grow out entirely pink and perfect. And you keep it trimmed, trim it back as far as you can, and keep the medicine on it as much as you can. Don't miss a day, but you don't have to do it more than twice a day after the first month. Now, some other good herbal remedies. What can you do for a sore throat? Well, for a sore throat, to gargle with charcoal is very good. That's soothing, and it is healing. Some studies have shown that certain bacteria can be taken up there. It is just drawn to the charcoal, and then it is taken out of the body. So you can use that if you would like. And to use that is a very excellent remedy, because often you have an intestinal component with the sore throat, and that will help you with the intestinal component as well. You can use golden seal gargles and then swallow that as well. You swallow the charcoal and you swallow the golden seal. If a person is really fighting a cold, and they have a tincture of golden seal and echinacea, I recommend that they take the tincture, a teaspoonful, every hour for several hours. But also the grapefruit seed extract is excellent when you're fighting a cold. Start with a simple remedies. If you can start within the first 20 minutes of feeling your first symptom, you're in the very best, you have the very best opportunity of healing that disorder. So far as stomach aches are concerned, I tell people that they should consider every stomach ache that lasts for more than an hour to be appendicitis, and go ahead and treat it as such. Then, if it should be appendicitis, you have a good chance of curing it if you start early. You may say, well, I didn't know that any appendicitis ever cured. Yes, it does cure. It does heal in a certain percentage of cases. The reason that we know that is that at autopsy, when we find the appendix, in about 20% of instances, when the appendix is there, we look at it, and it has a scar and is obliterated. The lumen, or the mid portion of it, is obliterated by a disease process that has gone on and healed. That's healed appendicitis. 20% of cases of people who are in their 70s will have a scarred, partly obliterated appendix, and we know that at some time in their past, they've had appendicitis which has healed. So you may be one of those if you'll start early. Don't wait until you have a fever that's raging and your white blood cell count is 18 to 25,000. Then you need a surgeon. But if you'll start early, you can often do much to help yourself with that. And by the way, if you should ever have to have your abdomen opened for any reason, don't let the surgeon take out your appendix if it isn't diseased. But you're asleep and you are there on the table. How are you going to discuss this with him? Well, you do so ahead of time. You say to your surgeon, "Doctor, I know you're going to open my abdomen, and I know that it is your belief that if you take out my appendix, it's doing me a favor, then it won't ever get appendicitis for sure. But I'd rather have it there, so don't take out my appendix. I want it there when I wake up, just where it is now." Make sure that he understands that. Make sure you state it nicely and clearly, make sure that he knows nothing is to leave your body that is not diseased. The same thing is true with tonsils. Keep your tonsils where they are, if you can, and I'm sure that many of you would like to have your tonsils back where they used to be, just like I would. But they're in some pathologist's mine or somewhere in some pathologist's museum bottle, and I hope yours aren't there. What happens if you lose your appendix or your tonsils? You lose a portion of the immune system that our divine designer has given us to fight disease. And when the tonsils are big in children, that means they're really working to help that child stay healthy. And that's why they're big. They overgrow because they're big, because they're busy. And so we want to keep them there on duty. They're like watchdogs, and they need to be there. And people who lose their tonsils for any reason, or the appendix for any reason, have a slight but measurable increase in cancer. Those who've lost their tonsils about the head and neck, usually cancers are more likely to occur there. For those who have lost the appendix, cancers inside the abdomen more likely to occur. Now, if you will look on pages 36 and 37, you can see how to make certain herbal preparations. Infusions are made by taking freshly boiled water and pouring it onto a herb. Or you can set the freshly boiled water off the fire and then add the herb to the pot if you prefer. And this is for all of the lighter herbs like blossoms, leaves, silks. These can be treated in this way. You let it stand for 20 to 30 minutes, and I usually like to have it stand for 30 minutes if you have the time. And strain and drink. If you're in a big hurry, then you can let it stand for no more than 5 minutes and then give it to the patient. Sometimes you'll have a patient in labor and they are asking for something for pain, and you may want to reduce the time and give them something for pain, and it will often help them. Then you make more of it and give them the rest of it after it has spent the length of time that it should with the herb. Then, generally, for a therapeutic dose of a non-potent, non-intense herb, which is most of them, you can use 30 grams or 1 ounce or 2 tablespoonsful in a pint of freshly boiled water. Now, you may also use, generally speaking, it's a teaspoonful to a cup, but if you want to make a very strong medicinal herb tea, then you use 2 tablespoons to 1 pint. Now, for a decoction, it's the same thing except that you generally gently simmer it for 10 to 25 minutes. Seeds, like hawthorn berry seed, what would you use hawthorn berry seed for? The heart and the blood pressure. It is also anti-inflammatory. It has also slightly anti-clotting properties. So it can be helpful in a number of ways. Chopped whole plants like echinacea should be simmered gently. Barks and roots, all are simmered. Then you can make infusion decoction mixtures. And what you should do is to do the simmering first, then add the material that you're going to make an infusion from and let it set for, after you've taken it off the fire, then let it set for 20 to 30 minutes. You can generally make up enough of the tea for 1 day and it should be refrigerated. You can also make a formula, adding a number of things. I don't usually like to add more than about 7 herbs in 1 tea. When you get more than that, then it's more difficult for the water to extract the active ingredients. And a number of preparations are given here. And then you can see how to use Young's rule to find how much of the tea you should give to a child. And it is simply divide the age of the child into the age plus 12. No, the age of the child divided by the age plus 12. And that will give you what fraction of the adult dose you should use for a child. With catnip tea is very good for babies with the colic. So make up a cup of tea in the usual way and then give a tablespoonful to the baby with colic, and that will help a lot. Now, are there any questions about herbs and their preparation? I'm sure somebody's going to want to know how to check on your herbs. And we have a number of books that we can recommend to you. Here's Back to Eden, Medicinal Plants, and generally, if you're going to use herbs very much, you'll need to have more than one, because one book will tell you about some things and another one. Here is, I believe that every place that Ellen White mentioned or the Bible mentions herbs are in this little book. Then here is one, Growing and Using Herbs Successfully. That's a very nice book. Here's one called The Herbalist and Herbs and Rodale's, this book. And here's another one, Rodale's Illustrated Encyclopedia for Herbal Remedies. And all of these are available at New Lifestyle Books. And there are others that you can get from health food stores. Some are really quite a lot. And I have mentioned this, and I believe that New Lifestyle Books has this in 2 sizes. Oh, just one? Oh, okay. Well, we'll try to fill up some more bottles of the 2 ounce ones, 2.5 ounce ones. These are the 1/2 ounce ones. These have an advantage in that they have a little application thing, so you just put it around like that and put it on the nail, and it's very good. You can also put them in a little used hairspray bottle and just spray it on, and that makes it nice to do. Yes?
Are these formulas made from fresh herbs or dried?
You may use them from fresh herbs or from dried herbs. If you use the fresh herbs, it's generally about 4 times the weight of the dried herbs. And here's a question, how can we validate the use of herbs? It is with a book. You need to have a book to read its properties. I have maybe mentioned to you not to take a drug that you are not familiar with, that you have not checked in the PDR. Generally, I say that about the herbal preparations as well. Before you go into using a herbal remedy wholesale and for a long period of time, check on the herb and make sure that it is, and check in a book. That's what I have to do. I'm not a herbalist. I either check with a herbalist or I look in a book. What was in the green drink that the nurse gave you? All right. She went to our garden and got a number of green things. One thing was a cucumber. She got some comfrey leaf. Now, some people don't take comfrey by mouth anymore, and I don't recommend it since the bad press that it got a few years ago from the University of Florida principally, but from many other places as well. I don't advise people to take it, but at that time, we were taking it by mouth. We do use it in compresses externally, but now we don't advise people to take it unless they read about it and know the risks and are willing to take it. And she also put collard greens and some pineapple juice and blended this all together. A number of other greens, parsley and some other greens, whatever she had there, she just put it in, and that was what we used. It tasted good. Yes, I liked it. It was really quite good. Yes. What part of the calendula do you use? It's the flowers, the flower part. Okay, if you have any other questions about herbs, would you please write those down? You may know that we made some videos on a variety of organ systems in the body. And Cal Thrash is going to tell you about those, and they are available at the commissary.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.